Revolutions Per Minute is a weekly radio show from the New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, recorded live at WBAI 99.5 in Brooklyn every Tuesday at 5. RPM is about doing the work to build a democratic socialist future. Every week, hear the latest news, analysis, and organizing experience from the minds and hearts of activists fighting every day in NYC. Join the movement at socialists.nyc.
Yo, what's good, New York? You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute podcast exclusive. We are not live from the new WBAI studios due to a FCC regulation situation. We will update you with more information on that later in the show. But we are a socialist radio show and podcast for members of the New York City Democratic Socialists of America. The DSA is the largest socialist organization in the United States, with 75,000 members nationwide, and NYC DSA is its biggest chapter. We are run by our 5,500-plus members and organizers who are working together to build democratic socialism in all five boroughs. Today, I'm joined by Michael Carter to give a brief update on the current situation that Revolutions Per Minute is in at WBAI and our overall organizing project that's taking place at the station. Some of our listeners may be familiar with Red Wave, in which we embarked on a project in 2019 that eventually got four members elected to WBAI's local station board. But what are the bigger strategic aims of this project? And how does it relate to an overall struggle to build working class media here in New York, around the country, and across the entire world? But first, we have to transform the degraded working class institution that is WBAI. And just to clarify things, we are off the air today. There's been some issues for us at the station. We had a potential FCC violation where one of our guests cursed on air, so we had to be suspended. But this also relates to, you know, the slow process to us getting back air on air, and the understanding of FCC regulations hits on the fact that we're on a radio station, so it's different than normal podcasting, as many of the podcast listeners here, as we're always reminding people that we're on 99.5 FM, but that comes with a different sort of territory, both in what we have to follow in terms of the sort of rules of being on the airwaves, but it also creates a situation where we have to deal with management, so that creates a whole different sort of dynamic than when you're producing a show on your own. It gives us access to this historical station that is WBAI. It's large broadcasting signal, but it also in turn has to means we have to encounter some of the more challenging aspects of that legacy and where the station has went over the past few decades. And its place is what I would argue as a degraded working class media institution, one that is absolutely worth fighting for and saving, but one we have to recognize has a lot of problems. So we've been doing some organizing based on that at the station, as some of you may have heard through Red Wave. And we wanted to, since we're off the air, we can be a little more honest about what we say. We also can use some other language that we're normally not allowed to. I don't know if that will slip in. But yeah, so I'm joined by Michael Carter, one of our fellow producers and hosts, just to talk a little bit about WBAI, about Red Wave. There's an important vote coming up being sent out by NYC DSA's Media Working Group to officially endorse this project. And so I think it's an exciting time for this sort of work. It's also a time where perhaps the conflict, the kind of internal contradictions between producers and management at the station are heating up in a new way, and also a time where we might be shifting our strategy. So Michael, sorry to kind of give a little long rambling introduction to you, but thanks for being on to talk about this.
No, you're all good. I was actually just doing a little research, and I don't know if you're familiar with the famous George Carlin sketch, The Seven Dirty Words, which is, you know, the whole thing about these are the words you're not allowed to say on broadcast television. Ironically, WBAI and the Pacifica Foundation were actually a major plaintiff before the Supreme Court in favor of the dirty words, you know, back in the day, and I think the 1970s. So, you know, unfortunately, it was a guest, and we understand that they have their standards that they need to uphold. You know, whether those standards are applied equitably and equally is another question. So, you know, I thought I'd zoom us back a little bit and just ask, you know, you are one of the folks who really envisioned this project from the beginning, both Red Wave and RPM. I'm wondering, what was the need that you sought to fill with this whole project? What is the sort of one sentence encapsulation of what you hope this project could be?
Yeah, so that's a really, really great question. And I think both aspects of both of these projects, Revolutions Per Minute and Red Wave, which is in many ways an outgrowth of Revolutions Per Minute, but it's also something that has a more expansive long-term vision that's beyond just one show and is really about building up working class institutional power in media, is that we want to build a socialist media that is highlighting the work of organizers, that is demystifying both socialism, not only just as a concept, but materially, in the sense that we want to be bringing on voices of working class people who are engaged in struggle, and really not just create opportunities for people to see the world differently, but to participate in that transformation. And there's been a lot of discussion recently, you know, you get really lost in the online Twitter sphere and all these debates about, you know, who is representing the working class in the media institutions that fight for socialism now. And there is a real material problem that there is not enough structures where working class people can be empowered through the media. So I always envisioned for RPM something that really wasn't about like, you know, creating a media brand name for myself or any of the other people who are involved in the hosting, but to really highlight the work that the guests are doing. And what we want to be doing with Red Wave as a whole is kind of building this up institutionally. So it's more than just like the one show that NYC DSA has. And why WBAI is such a perfect place to do this is that, you know, just for all its faults and problems as it is, and its inability to live up to, I think, what its true potential is, it does bring on a more diverse spectrum of producers than any other radio station you're going to see. You're going to hear from more working class people, from more people who are coming out of New York's black and brown communities, the most oppressed communities in the city. So it's really highlighting these voices in a different way. But also the reality is, it's, as I was just saying, it's not living up to its potential. It has this massive signal that is really worth tens upon tens of millions of dollars, being in the middle of the dial 99.5 FM. And this could be a real mechanism for really connecting the masses with socialist theory and practice, and also building up this sort of institution beyond just listening on their airwaves, but as a space that people feel comfortable going. Either, you know, it's more difficult in times of COVID, but the physical station itself could be a space for organizing. And we can really start to, as we build power at the station, bring on new programs that highlight the kind of the current struggles that are happening, because I think the station itself relies deeply on its legacy of being connected to a lot of the struggles of the 60s and the 70s, which are crucially important to understand and to relate to and embrace as part of our legacy as the left. But it's really necessary to start kind of bringing aboard the new sites of struggle, the new organizers, people in working class communities feel like this is a place that they can go where they're going to be connecting to hundreds of thousands of New Yorkers across the city.
One thing that, you know, in my career in sort of both media adjacent and politics adjacent spaces that I've noticed is there seems to be a, you know, fairly robust progressive media infrastructure that has not very much explicit connection to specifically socialist politics and a vision of politics that centers the working class as the driver of history through dialectics. And so while, you know, we definitely want to work with our progressive comrades and brothers and sisters to create the society that we want, you know, it's my feeling that there are those outlets already. You know, you have Democracy Now, The Nation, Slate. Like there's a whole kind of media ecosystem built up that has given itself the sort of lexicon of saying we are quote unquote on the left. And while in one sense, in terms of American society, they're not, you know, fascists, they're not reactionaries, they're not Republicans, they're not so-called centrists. But it still leaves out that crucial voice that sort of brings context and also in some cases even many of the ideas that the progressive left seizes upon have their origins in the socialist left. And I think especially as Americans in the world's imperial superpower, we have a responsibility to make sure that that aspect of the history of social movements and liberation struggles is not eclipsed, because that aspect is the one that's under the most assault. It doesn't really challenge power in the same way to have a progressive radio station or progressive media organization than it does to have a socialist radio station or socialist media organization. And, you know, I think if you look back at the 1960s and 70s and things like COINTELPRO and the concerted effort of repression undertaken by the FBI and other organs of the national security state, you can see that it's the socialist ideas that were considered the most threatening. And when those ideas were paired with especially a narrative of Black liberation and a narrative of sort of actually dealing with on a material level the insane inequity that accompanied the founding of this nation state, that is really what scares the powers that be much more than some of the softer forms of liberalism, which can be important and have made strides, but do not get at the actual material conditions of people's lives in the same way, at least, that socialism and socialist thought does.
Yeah, I think those are really good points and a good overview of the fact that there is this sort of progressive media industrial complex. I don't use that necessarily as a in a derogatory sense. It's more that there are these institutions that exist on kind of the liberal left and even that are social democratic in a certain sense. And there is also kind of an emerging independent left media. And I would say, you know, there's places like Democracy Now!, which has its origins at a place like WBAI, that kind of threads the needle, that it has its feet in both places, that it brings on true radical socialists, but also maintains its connections with the sort of broader progressive media. And I think that's something that is necessary, at least as things are currently constituted. But the reason a program like Democracy Now! Could even emerge and become this powerful force is because of the historical institution that WBAI is. It was an incubator for this sort of programming, this sort of at least critical analysis of capital in the state, in the United States. And I think it's really interesting you bring up COINTELPRO, because this is like, just like Democracy Now!, part of, I think, the strong legacy of the station going back to the 60s, where WBAI, Pacifica, are the first place where you hear the COINTELPRO leaks on air, where they are doing something that the FBI doesn't want to happen, and is this sort of challenging state power. And so that's the sort of legacy of WBAI that we want to draw on, this sort of incredible investigative reporting, this willingness to kind of break with the ruling class and what they view as acceptable in media. And this is something that the station does still continue to do, but its power has been limited for a long time for a variety of reasons. And we're not getting it. We didn't get into this involved in this work because WBAI is this already extremely impressive working class media institution, but rather because it is deeply flawed. It has the potential, with its broadcasting capability being on 99.5 FM, it has some of these very strong historical legacies and still has some really great programming, but it also has a lot of very flawed and frankly bad programming. There's hucksters who are on the air. We're very opposed to the bringing in of Leonard Lopate. There is a commitment to also in a strategy of fundraising and of management that are detrimental to how the station can survive in the long term and be the sort of space of working class media that it needs to be. We got into this project because we saw this potential. We know this history. We know there are good people in it. There are great producers, but there's also all these limitations. And we've been trying to push back against them. So that's why we're kind of really embarking on this next phase of the Red Wave strategy. We started by getting people elected. And another good feature of WBAI is it has this internal democratic structure where listener members and staff members get to vote people onto the local station board. But this is also limited. This local station board doesn't have all the power. So it has to kind of constantly be navigating between the national organization and management. Something that we've seen after being at the station for nearly 2 years is that there needs to be more worker power. The paid engineers are unionized, but there's this also divide that exists between producers, paid engineers, even though they both have this often antagonistic relationship with management. How can we build power at the station by organizing in that way? Or how do we really start to create these mechanisms where we can be uplifting new programmers, bringing in people who are highlighting and engaged in the struggles of building working class power, whether that's in the workplace, in housing, fighting back against police brutality, fighting for reproductive justice, fighting for eco-socialism. And we've been doing that within RPM, but we want to really kind of spread this out across the station. That's why we've worked to bring on some really great shows like Working Class Heroes that really highlight the perspective of people engaged in struggle here in New York City. This also relates to it in terms of like NYCDSA and why this new fundraising strategy that we put together is so crucial, is that we need to have this sort of social base of listener members, people who can use the fact that they're both eligible voters as well as people who are sustaining the station through their funds as a certain point of leverage, as a power, that you are the base of the station, you as contributors, because you're the listeners alongside with the workers there, especially if we build up working producer organization alongside the engineers already existing union, that if we have this sort of organized power in these multiple spheres related to the station, that we can actually begin to force through some of these necessary transformations, particularly on the way that the station conceives itself as an actual institution that's not just trying to dig itself out of the hole constantly, but is actually waging war against how media is organized under capitalism.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's this sort of difference in approach and this kind of tension is really emblematic of the broader tension on the left right now, in terms of you've got this legacy of struggle of the civil rights movement of the 1960s and 70s. You have a lot of people who are of the older generation who participated in that and got a lot of meaning from that and did a lot of amazing work. But that legacy right now is, you know, obviously under really, really significant threat on almost all fronts. Some of the people who took part in that uprising, that sort of outpouring of anger, that outpouring of change, do not feel that the current movements, the current outpourings, the current uprisings, the George Floyd uprisings, all of the things that are going on right now, they don't necessarily feel that they are a continuation of that legacy, when I would argue, and at least for me personally, they really are. Like I really wish that the civil rights movement had achieved its greatest dreams in the North, in the South, all over. But unfortunately, that's not the world we live in. We live in a segregated world. We live in an unequal world. We live in a world with mass incarceration. We live in a world with mass forced hysterectomies of immigrants. And, you know, unfortunately, that means that we cannot just look back upon our triumphs of the past and act as though we don't need a change in approach for the future, because unfortunately we're losing. You know, the furthest right-wing party in the industrialized world controls the presidency, the Supreme Court, and the Senate. And climate change is accelerating, and all of these other social problems persist and continue to fester. So, you know, we really want to work with people. We want people who are willing to be flexible, to be materialist, to think about, okay, what actually is going on and how can we change it, instead of this short-termism where it's like, okay, how do we make today's operating deficit, or how do we sort of manipulate on a small scale within the WBAI organization? Our ultimate goal is broader than that.
What you're really hitting on, which is really, really important, is we need to combat this short-term, unstrategic thinking. That this is the sort of thing that I'm seeing in relation to discussions around this 2020 election, where everyone is circling around this question of like whether or not you vote for Biden, when the question for the organized left is, how are we building working class power? Whatever is happening on these various media platforms where you're having this constant horse race, unnecessary debate, is a distraction from the real strategic question of how does the working class organize and build power? And how does it do this? How does it engage and struggle and make gains and wins and build more power from it? And so to kind of just finish this conversation off, I just want to kind of reiterate how this relates specifically to what we're doing at WBAI, what Red Wave is focused on, why we're directing our energy here, and why we think this is valuable and important. Because we have, as I mentioned before, sort of, there is this existing independent socialist media, and I think it's been a very great development. It's been very encouraging to see this happen over the past 10 years, the kind of resurgence of some older publications, their transformation and shift to embracing a better analysis, or the emergence of new publications, emergence of all these podcasts. And I'd say there's kind of a cut, but there's still things that hold the emergence of these new independent media institutions back. One is that they're disparate. A lot of them are kind of operating in silos, and maybe they're engaging in a discourse with each other, but they're not building up organization in the same way that you would normally want to see in a working class movement. Where you do see that is in the organization of unions among journalists and other media workers, and which is another very crucial development that we want to be bringing together with Red Wave. We want WBAI to be a place where these sort of media institute, these sort of unions of journalists and other media workers can represent themselves on the airway, talk about what's going on in media, and give this sort of anti-capitalist, pro-worker media perspective. So there's this kind of disparate quality, this lack of organization. And there's also the fact that it still has a limited audience. It has really expanded the ideas of struggle, of socialism, of building working class power, well beyond the place it was 15 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when the left was in a real bottom place. But it is still mostly geared towards a certain fracture of the working class, disproportionately college educated and under 40. And it's and especially working in certain industries that are crucial to organize things like education, media, and healthcare. It's great that these sort of college educated workers are building organization, but we need to be connecting with people all across the working class. And this is what WBAI and its signal offers, but it's not taking advantage of it to the extent that it needs to. In order for this to change requires organization. That requires work organization at the station, an organization of listeners who are tied to the movements that are going on, so that then we can kind of use this power to bring those voices onto the station so that the station can then use its broadcasting signal to bring more resources to these movements, to these organizations, this mutually beneficial relationship. And so this is kind of the strategy in which we're operating on, which is about building working class organization that is oriented towards struggle. So I don't want to list off all the various ways that you can get in contact with Red Wave. It'd be much easier for that to be in the show notes, but we really encourage people to get involved. There's a lot of work that can be done in terms of fundraising, in terms of media outreach. We are also looking to get new proposals for programs. There's a new programming director search ongoing. If you're someone who feels like they could be a great candidate for that, or know someone who is a great candidate for that, please reach out to us. We've got email, we've got Twitter, we've got our own website. We will list those in the show notes. If you are a member of NYC DSA Media Working Group, there is a vote going out for the endorsing this proposal for building this sort of media working class organization that we need as a movement. We would really, really appreciate it if you vote yes on that. And there's a lot of work to plug in to do. We hope that this was an informative update. And thank you so much, Michael, for joining me in the conversation. Michael has been helping out with Red Wave, and we're looking for people to plug in more and more outside of this sort of work that we do on the local station board. We want to really expand this work into a kind of all-encompassing organizing project that's about building power.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for having me. And, you know, if you have an idea that doesn't quite fit into the categories we just put out, we're an open book. We're interested in being creative about this because, you know, the other side is certainly creative about it.
That's a great way to end it. They are always organizing. So if you don't, you're going to lose. Thanks, Michael.
For sure. Thank you.
And you've been listening to a podcast exclusive episode of Revolutions Per Minute. We're going to be dropping some more content later this week that is going to give an update on the situation in Southwest Louisiana following another devastating hurricane, as well as an update on the struggle for reproductive justice. So once again, thank you for joining Revolutions Per Minute, and we'll be back with more content later this week.